This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are most welcome to this evening, co-organized by the Austrian Cultural Forum and the Slot Foundation from Philadelphia. But before I continue to say anything, I would like you to welcome the great maestro, Hermann Nietzsche. Please extend also a welcome to his wife. Miss Nietzsche is here with us, and I'm also very happy about this. And last but not least, actually for my part of this evening, please welcome Aaron Levy, the executive director of the Slot Foundation in Pennsylvania, who made actually our come together possible by producing this wonderful book that you will be seeing today and that you can touch and I hope even buy today. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Andreas Stadler. I'm the director of the Austrian Cultural Forum. And this is really a great hour for me and a great moment because I myself have a history with Hermann Nietzsche, as modest as it might be. Hermann Nietzsche will be presented later in depth and scientifically. But I really want to tell you that when Hermann Nietzsche was still an enfant terrible, actually, or a persona non grata of the art world in Austria, which was actually until the 80s, and I was a youngster. I took part in the performance of his 7th symphony at the theater in Graz, when all my family and many friends of mine told me, don't go and perform there, don't sing there, because this is a dangerous citizen of Austria. My history with Hermann Nietzsche continued many years later. I worked for the Austrian president, who still received many protest letters about the impossibility and of the art of Hermann Nietzsche, and protesters who kept saying that it's a crime to spend taxpayers' money, which he actually never really needed to have. And it was my duty to answer these letters, referring to the freedom of art in the Constitution of Austria. And as a revenge, I persuaded the Austrian president a little bit later to pick one of his most beautiful paintings and hanged it into his front office, where it's now on display 5 to 3 meters height, and every visitor who comes and sees the Austrian president sees a painting of Hermann Nietzsche, of a person who was imprisoned at least 3 times in Austria and who was, as I said before, an enfant terrible, who is now a world-renowned artist. That's why it's a great hour and a great honor for me personally to have you here, Hermann. Thank you very much. And with these words, I ask Aaron. Ah, well, that's usually happens sometimes at the Austrian Cultural Forum, that the other protagonist is missing, but we always find them usually. And a hand over to Aaron, who will guide you through this evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andreas. And many thanks to Martin, to Mariana, to Sigrid as well. It's been a real pleasure and an honor for all of us at Slot Foundation to have worked with you and your colleagues towards tonight's event. It's also our great pleasure, as you already said, to have Hermann and Rita here with us tonight. It's been many months in the making, many years actually, and the fact that you're here in America is enormously received by us. We're very grateful for it. I'd also like to acknowledge the presence of Adrian Daub, Susan Gerosi, and Michelle Richman. They've each contributed to the volume that we're launching tonight. They've each come from quite far away. Adrian, I hope I don't embarrass you, but he's actually defended his dissertation successfully 2 hours ago. So we'll be celebrating many things tonight. I'd also like to acknowledge Mike Weiss Gallery, Herman's New York representative, Joel Backer of Microcinema International, who will be distributing the publication internationally, and Peter Kasparek, who works very closely with Herman. He produced, through his production company, the DVD that we've included, this artwork that we've included with the book. So thanks to all of them. As to the schedule for tonight's event, the program is as follows. There'll be brief remarks by my colleague Oswaldo Romberg and Jean-Michel Rabaté as well from SLOT. There will be, hopefully, brief remarks by a student of mine, Laura Fox, on behalf of the class that had produced this book with SLOT Foundation. After that, there'll be a brief 14-minute film that will show a work of Herman's that's included in the book, as I just mentioned. And then following that, we'll have a conversation. And the idea is to make it quite informal, to kind of offer a mode of participation, to open it up to you guys. And so we hope that you'll each generate some questions and pose them to Herman at that time. And then finally, we'll break out the wine and we'll celebrate, and the books will be available for sale downstairs. So the publication didn't really happen overnight, like all curatorial projects. It developed over a period of years, in fact, sometimes rapidly, sometimes incredibly, frustratingly slowly, but at all times with an intensity and an immediacy appropriate to Herman's work. The copies actually arrived this past Friday, just in time for tonight. So that immediacy, that intensity has kind of haunted this project from its start. One of the defining aspects of the publication is not just the artistic content, Herman's work, or the design of it, or the critical essays, but also that the function of the book in relationship to contemporary curatorial and artistic practice. There's been a series of questions that, as curators, Jean-Michel and Oswaldo and I have really thought through over the years. For instance, should an exhibition or a publication like this one be a staging ground for provocation and disorientation? In a way, should it resemble the ideas that Herman's work embodies? How might we present an exhibition or a publication as a public proposition to be experienced and judged, rather than simply acknowledged or accepted? Again, how can art pose a series of questions, not a series of answers? And we don't really presume to answer any of these questions. We just try to kind of provoke and present them to our publics. I think what drew Oswaldo and Jean-Michel and I to Nietzsche's work in the first place was his penchant for symbolically charged and physically intense actions. These actions often deny viewers the option of remaining neutral and in the stands, securely watching as a bloody choreography unfolds. In our program at SLOT with Herman, we wanted to be attentive to the artist's interest in turning viewers into participants and his desire, again, for immediacy, perhaps even transposing that to curatorial practice. And hopefully you see behind me some of these wonderful and charged images that we've been working with. These are all images that are also in the book, so you'll be able to experience them in a few forms tonight. Oswaldo, in his curatorial essay for our exhibition at SLOT Foundation in 2005, saw Nietzsche's art as offering an opportunity to kind of really essay these considerations, to really think through these considerations, but also to engage in dialogue about the relation between the artistic states explored in Nietzsche's work and our lived world. And I think Oswaldo will speak more directly to that. For many viewers approaching the work of Nietzsche for the first time, it's perhaps not clear, at least in America, how they might respond to the intensity, to the entertaining, let's say, event character of this specific Austrian artist, Hermann Nietzsche. And Dieter Ranta in the book really addresses this through the photographic documentation, really the only way that many of us in America have ever experienced this work. One of the things we also had to deal with was, in a way, the American unfamiliarity with the art historical context out of which Herman is coming. And so hopefully in the Q&A, in the question and answer, we'll tackle that. So with this publication, we were kind of trying to challenge that American tendency to reject outright the excessiveness of the work, the extreme qualities of the work, a body of work which, in addition to so many other qualities, helps us really to consider how intensity and immediacy is valued in contemporary art and life. Nietzsche's art also invites us to imagine what a new cultural landscape might consist of when artists proceed upon an expanded definition of practice. And I think it's quite clear here that this is a very expanded idea of practice at play. Susan Derosi, in her contribution, very specifically addresses this in relationship to the historical trauma of the war that Herman really has as a backdrop to his work. The title of the publication, again, gestures to the vexed reception Hermann Nietzsche's work has received in America. Hermann Nietzsche in America is the subtitle. A reception notable for the conspicuous lack of exhibitions about his work, as well as publications in the English language. The international visibility of Nietzsche's work renders this paucity of exhibitions and publications in English in America all the more conspicuous and for us problematic. So we hope that the availability in one volume of critical essays combined with photographic documentation, excerpts from his early writings, as well as a special companion DVD that we'll be watching together, really redresses this imbalance. As I allude to above, this publication is a bit unique in another respect as well. It's been published and edited by students. It's been published in conjunction with a curatorial seminar at the University of Pennsylvania that I had the pleasure to teach this year. And what we tried to do over the course of the year was familiarize the students with Herman's work and then involve them in the really nuts and bolts aspects of producing a publication. So we tried to give them a theoretical understanding of his work as well as very practical curatorial training. And so it's a pleasure to have some of them here with us tonight. And if Laura Fox is here, or she's probably on her way from Philadelphia, then she'll also speak a bit. So I'm going to end my oddly lengthy comments here. I'm just going to introduce Oswaldo Romberg, again, a senior curator here at Slott Foundation in Philadelphia, a remarkable artist in his own right. Oswaldo proposed to Jean-Michel and I some years ago that our organization undertake that retrospective of Herman's work. He went on to curate really a remarkable show, I think one of the most remarkable shows we've done. And it was a first for Philadelphia. Herman had never been to Philadelphia. He had never seen Duchamp in our museum. Audiences in Philadelphia were completely unfamiliar with his work. It was a learning process for all of us. And so that exhibition laid the groundwork for the publication and for tonight's event. And so it's with enormous gratitude to Oswaldo that we're here now. So Oswaldo Romberg.
Good evening. I always like to tell the story how I meet first time Herman. It was a blood meeting. A bloody meeting. We worked in the same gallery in Paris for years, and then we happened to work with the same gallery in Vienna for many years now, and in Berlin too. But the reason that I talk about the blood first meeting is because when Heike Kurze, who is my gallerist, say, you want to meet Nietzsche? Like, of course. And where we are going to eat, they took me to a restaurant, and the first thing we eat was blood sauces. A lot of blood sauces. There were many other dinners. One day he invited me to dinner in Vienna, and we were like a few hours, because he made me try every plate in the restaurant. And we were eating and drinking for 3 or 4 hours, I remember. And then the last dinner was with his cousin, when he made me this beautiful homage. And I'm so thankful for you and Rita for that. But I would like to talk a little about Herman and why I did the show of Herman Nietzsche. First of all, I'm not a professional curator. I became a curator because there was no other way to try to change things in the city. I guess that I'm not so satisfied with what happened in the art world today as an artist and as a man who think. And one of the things that you can do when you're not happy with something that is happening around you is to try to change it. So Slott, who was in the meeting with Jean-Michel and Aaron, was the possibility to create a place when we can do conference, shows, etc. As a curator, because as you said before, I'm an artist, I curate shows. I never do a show if I don't have a deep reason to do it. I want to do a show of painting for many years. Now I have a reason to do it. And the show of Nietzsche was a consequence of my intuition that the word of terrorism who was going around was, because of course you can relate the work of Nietzsche to the post-war situation in Austria, which is a reality. But I think that Nietzsche has the premonition of things, like every great artist, that things are going to happen. And when we see the images today of Nietzsche, and we see what happened in the television, and we see what happened all over the world, how people blow up themselves, I see enormous relation, and I see an enormous capacity of the artist to prevent things that are going to happen. This is one of the reasons. When I did the say that is in the book, I thought about what happened when somebody cut the head of somebody in front of the television, that happened a few years ago, and what is the relation and the difference between an act of violence produced in the reality and an act of violence which is produced as an artificium to produce an emotion, but which is controlled and you can retire. You cannot retire of an act of terrorism, but you can retire of an act of art. So I did the base of this show in the idea of confronting these two situations. That was the reason why I did the show in Philadelphia. The other thing which attracted me in the work of Nietzsche, and always was the case with Nietzsche, I still believe, maybe naivety of Argentinian born, that art should have a vision of the world. A work of an artist, mature, complete, designed already for years, supposed to give a vision of the world. And when you see the work of Nietzsche and the music of Nietzsche and all the process that Nietzsche has been involved, I see what I request from any artist to be. A premonition, a visionaire, somebody who can really, really give to the people the possibility to understand, without words, that's what is art, a reality who we cannot see in another way. Nietzsche has accomplished that already for many years, has created an universe that sometimes makes us feel afraid, sometimes makes us sensitive to things that happen, but it's incredibly deep, serious, profound, rich, and marvelous. That's what I want to say. Thank you for your work.
Bonsoir, buenas tardes, guten Abend, good evening. I wanted to show that we like to speak several languages, at least several accents, in Philadelphia at Slot. Und ich freue mich, dass wir heute Hermann Nietzsche und Rita Nietzsche feiern können. I'd like to say a few words simply about the beautiful book that has just been produced by speaking to the subtitle Hermann Nietzsche in America, America that could perhaps be spelled with a K if we think of Kafka's America, and the discovery by a young man, Karl Rossmann, of the Statue of Liberty, brandishing, as you may know, not a torch, but a sword, which has something to do, maybe, with certain images we see here. But to connect Nietzsche's work, which is enormous, with the American context, I'll start with one incident, one detail, one vignette. When Jackson Pollock died on August 11th, 1956, at the age of 44, Hermann Nietzsche was still a teenager, 18 to be more precise. It was only 1 year later, nevertheless, that he had a flash near Prinzendorf and saw the lineaments of an entire oeuvre, a body of work that would take several days to unfold, that would involve poetry, music, art, and a crowd. Jackson Pollock's car crash on a beautiful August day had something suicidal about it. His drip period was over. He had recently returned to figuration. He hesitated between dark shapes and the use of color. He was at that time, in 1956, the most famous living American. But his celebrity was based upon a series of misconceptions. He had been, as you all know, probably promoted by Clement Greenberg, whose endorsement described his motivations and even the substance of his work in terms that were a little foreign to what Pollock actually wanted to do. His innate primitivism, his sense of a magical link to art objects, his insistence on action before any result was seen as viable, all these were swept away by Greenberg. And for Greenberg, of course, what counted were Greenbergian qualities, flatness, bidimensionality, abstraction, non-representability. Pollock had indeed become a man wider than life, an allegory of American art, an allegory of America, a hero struggling with the pure possibilities of the medium, paint, poured, or daubed on a canvas. This romantic posture of the individual struggling to express himself without having anything to represent was refused by Hermann Nietzsche very early. Nietzsche's work was elaborated against painting partly, and against a certain modernist ideology of purity, choosing, on the contrary, to promote another modernism, and this is something that Michel Richman develops wonderfully in the book, a modernism of excess, of subversion, of jouissance. Nietzsche was looking for new strategies in order to revitalize art, was taking perhaps his point of departure in Pollock's Sense of a Dead End, returning much later to similar drip paintings, Schuttbilder. The main difference was that perhaps Pollock had acted out the American dream of the individual, the romantic election of genius. Nietzsche, from the start, aimed at a collective action, a collective endeavor that would, at the same time, take into account the history of his country, history of Austria, history marked by the war and its well-known traumas, also a history partly shaped by Austrian Catholicism, a Catholicism that he saw enshrined in popular culture, close to a naturalistic sense of pagan rituals. Like Pollock, who was influenced by Surrealism as a young man, Nietzsche took his bearings in Expressionism. He was influenced by Trakl, the poet, and by Surrealism, but mostly by the Surrealist insistence on group activities, group projects. The actions would always come side by side with action paintings, but they could never be construed as abstract expressionism or even as concrete outsider art. New categories still have to be evolved, devised to talk well about Nietzsche's art, and this is why we wanted to pave the way by beginning here with this book, perhaps stressing this confrontation with American art. This would tend to suggest that Nietzsche's art has still an enormous impact to exert today on American art and American culture. Its relevance is that of a very youthful art that is affirmative, libidinal, dirty, excretive, vital, and more harmonious in the end than just negativistic, nihilistic, or subversive. Nietzsche's art, his videos, his performances, his paintings have to be seen more, have to be discussed broadly in America. And this is why we hope that this book is not just a book, but the beginning of a dialogue that will continue. At least I want to thank you for being here tonight.
Now going to watch Das Orgie and Mysterien Theater, a 40-year kind of retrospective of Herman's work in 14 minutes.
Maybe I say something. Peter Kasperak, a friend of mine, he did many video documentation about my work. We collected all the material which we had from the beginning, from my first action till now. And there's a lot of material, bad material, only it has only documentation character, and better material. And there's a film, this film is 4 hours. And we show it now very, very quickly. It's not an experiment of cutting. It's running, 4 hours running now in 14 minutes. But when you look exactly, you can see very much. Mm-hmm. The music, please, very loud. Yeah?